No, I'm not for sale.
Welcome to our initial episode of the Stampede Blue Colts Cast. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. Thank you guys for joining me on this medium as well. Really excited to start this up and get this bad boy going as well. If you guys are following me over from Locked On Colts, I appreciate everything you guys have done for me over there. That is a great site. Couldn't be more thankful for David Locke to give me that opportunity to do that. But this is what we're doing right now. I'm excited to get this bad boy going. My man, George Brimmer, has joined me for our initial episode. George, thank you for coming in, man.
Yeah, it's an honor to be here. I like getting, you know, got my own thing going. Lots of initials now. Lots of me for first times. It's fun.
Absolutely.
It's an exciting time of year.
It is a fun time of year. But like me and you talked about earlier, this is one of those times of year where you've asked all the questions you could possibly ask, and we don't have any answers, and I think that might be the most aggravating part of it, but we don't have any questions anymore. Like, we've already answered all of them. We've been through the roster. We've been through who are the surprise guys to be cut to make the roster, the surprise guys to break out. You know, I mean, God, how many storylines have we not seen? I think that everything's pretty much come to fruition so far in this offseason, and we're just a few short weeks away from our real first action. And I think that people, when the Colts arrive to camp, are going to be going ballistic.
Oh, yeah. We need new data. We need new information so we can change the conversation here. And we're going to get it. You know, that's a great thing. I really think that this training camp, and I know we've said this a billion times this offseason, I really think this training camp is going to be really fun and exciting because there are so many things with this team that are up in the air, but, you know, we've kind of dissected them as, you know, 10 times over at this point, but now you're going to start to see how some of these competitions begin to play out and, you know, and who's healthy and who's not. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. I do too. One of those questions, let's talk about this. Bill Polian, former GM of the Colts, he basically came out and said, you know, and I don't think he said it rudely or anything like that or meant it with any angst, but he was basically talking about how the Colts are going to have a struggle to make the playoffs this year. And though that's the headline, Polian says Colts aren't going to make the playoffs or whatever it actually is. But his reasoning behind it is actually valid, which is pretty impressive for, you know, some of the things that he's been saying on ESPN seem like they're pretty far out there. Like, you know, he's kind of lost it. But, you know, he talks about they're having minimal returning starters on defense. How about they've completely remade the defense, and that takes time for sub packages like nickel and dime packages. When you've got all those new players that are involved in that, he mentions that the Colts have better rushers than they've had before, talks about Jabal Sheard, and he talks about how the cohesion with this new group is really going to take some time and may take more than just this year. As excited as we are about all the new pieces, that's a legitimate concern. I mean, the chemistry with this group may not be immediate.
It's 100% a legitimate concern, and I think it's really kind of an interesting situation they find themselves in, because you almost have, you know, almost, you absolutely have a defense that's rebuilding. You know, this is a fresh start, a new era on that side. But on the offensive side, they have almost as much continuity as they've had at any point in the Andrew Luck era. They may end up with the same starting offensive line at the end of the year with, minus, you know, a healthy Jack Muir being added into the mix. But, you know, I can't remember the last time that happened with him where, you know, where he's got a center who already had all 16 starts the year before in front of him, who's going to return. Most of the skill position guys are coming back. You've added Kamar Aiken, but, you know, Donde Moncrief, T.Y. Hilton are coming back. Chester Rogers, Jack Doyle, they lost Dwayne Allen, but, you know, even Eric Swope was in the mix last year. Mm-hmm. Frank Gore is, of course, coming back. Robert Turbin's coming back. So you almost have two different worlds here, where you've got an offense that's trying to take that next step together as a unit and has built something, and people look at that offense, most people, I think, and say this is probably a top 10 offense in the NFL, and you've got a defense that you have absolutely no idea what to expect from, that's really starting from square one. It's a unique situation. I don't know how many teams have that, you know, that big of a dichotomy. It is a new era, and then at the same time, it's not a new era. So it just depends on kind of which side of the ball you're looking at.
Right. And all of this ultimately is exactly what camp is all about. I mean, that's one of the biggest issues that everybody wants to talk about right now, is that we just simply don't know what to expect. I mean, we see all the talent, the improvement in all the needed areas. We like that Ballard addressed the needs. We like that Ballard went best player available as well through the draft. We like that he brought in young guys. We like his contracts that he offered, that he gave them. But we still haven't seen anything happen. No real bullets, as everybody likes to say, have flown thus far. And that's impossible to just jump out on, you know, as a broad statement and say one thing or another, vice versa. However, this is what we do at this time of year. This is what we do. We guess, we wonder, we make predictions, which I'm going to be dropping a crazy prediction piece like I always do a couple weeks before training camp that I've only had one of those even come remotely close to being accurate. So it's been that those are fun to write and fun to read, but in reality, we're all clueless as to what we're going to see. I just hope that we don't get the negative surprises that we've seen in the past.
Mm-hmm. The non-contact injuries.
Yep.
The surprise, you know, look, this guy's lost it, and it becomes apparent, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully you don't want to see any of that out there. You know, for me, what I think is really interesting is it's hard, and we've talked about this before a little bit, but it's hard to not, even with the new pieces and everything else, it's hard to imagine this defense hasn't improved.
Right.
And if that's the case, and you can go back last year, and you can look at games that were really close and a defense with just slight improvement would have won those games, it's hard to imagine that the record won't be better this year.
Yeah.
But I think even with that being said, because the division has improved as well, I think Tennessee is a significantly better team than they were last year, and they were on the upswing last year. I think Houston getting J.J. Watt back is obviously a huge, huge factor for them. It's not impossible to believe that the Colts could be somewhere around 9-7 or 10-6, which would be an improvement from a year ago, and still not be in the playoffs just because Houston and Tennessee have even better records and maybe somebody else steals the other wild card spot out there in another division.
Yeah, I agree. And I want to get into a little bit about what we think about the other teams in the division as well. But when you look at the Colts schedule, I mean, the large majority of everybody who takes a look at it says the Colts schedule is a piece of cake. If you look at what they did last year, I mean, the same thing goes for everybody that's on the Colts schedule right now. We don't know who's going to mesh well or who's not. We could, you know, it's more than possible. And I'm just saying this as a, for instance, I'm not picking out a specific team here, but in the first few weeks, the Colts play the Cardinals and they play the Seahawks, I believe, all in like the first 5 weeks, I think. We could see
the first four weeks.
Okay. The Seahawks could be like a 6-10 team next year, but we all think they're great because they've got the Legion of Boom. They got this, they got that, you know, Russell Wilson, Michael Bennett. I mean, we don't know, but they may be falling apart right now. That Legion of Boom's getting older. You know, their running back situation's still kind of iffy, I guess. You know, Russell Wilson's kind of kept his head above water with, you know, not having a real downtrodden season, you know, even when injured and stuff like that. So they've lucked out in that regard. It could be one of those seasons for them. The Colts could, you know, go into this season, and a lot of these teams that they have on their schedule could be better than what we expect. They could also be worse. So I'm just saying that we don't really know what their schedule is right now. And that, to me, is one of the things when you're not only expounding or you're not only guessing at what your team or what a team is going to turn out to be, but you're guessing basically the entire 16-game schedule of a team. I just find that extremely impossible to do.
I'll give you a perfect example of what you're talking about. You go into last season. People were really high on the New York Jets. They were coming off, I think, a 10-6 year. They just
right.
missed the playoffs.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Everybody's
they're
going
to get Fitzpatrick.
That December. Oh, yeah. You know, things are going to – man, this team's going to take a big step forward. That December Monday night game when the schedule was made, that's going to be a tough one.
Yep.
You know, they got to go to the Jets in December. It's going to be a physical game. And what happened?
Yeah.
The Jets fell apart, and by the time they got there, I don't even think the Jets showed up to that game.
No.
It was a glorified practice for the Colts that night. No one was predicting that in April
right.
or even June or July.
Yep.
So you know, that's going to happen both ways this year. There's going to be somebody on this schedule that you're thinking right now, man, that's a difficult opponent who's just not going to be for whatever reason. And somebody who's being overlooked who is going to come out and be a really good team. I wonder, with the change in the head coach out there and Sean McVay's ability as an offensive play caller, I wonder if the Rams game won't be more difficult than maybe it would appear to be just based on last season's results.
I agree. And at week one, I think that might be, honestly, that might be the best time for the Colts to get them, because what do they do every year? The Rams, I mean, they always play the Seahawks hard. Sometimes they beat them. They always play the Cardinals hard. Sometimes they beat them. You know, they always seem to struggle against San Francisco, but they beat them every now and again as well, too. I mean, they're a team that is – they're basic – and this is weird because this is just how I see them in accordance to their division. But they're basically the Jacksonville Jaguars of the NFC West. I mean, they go in, they play people hard. They may still suck throughout the majority of the year. But as far as record, I mean, goes, but then, you know, they come in and they play their butts off and beat the Colts last year. I mean, you just don't know. And these I don't know anything about the Rams this year as far as what their schedule is or how they're going to actually play. But there's a lot in my mind that the Jacksonville Jaguars, when we compare these two kind of teams to their division, I suppose, there's a lot of games that the Jags lost last year that they probably shouldn't have, I think. Similar to, you know, we talk about those two or three wins for the Colts that could have gone either way and changed their record significantly. I think the Jags are in one of those situations this year where they've done a good job, obviously, in the offseason. You can talk about them winning the offseason, but they've got a crap load of talent, George. I mean, all of us know that.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a ton of talent down there. And that is a team that is going to be scary, A, because they always play the Colts well, or the Colts always play down to their competition. I don't know which, probably a little bit of both. But they always, even when they're terrible, they play the Colts well. The Titans, they seem to be a team that can't quite get over the Colts hump. You know, they struggle against the Colts. Even when they play well, the Colts will come back and they'll put it on them a little bit. So this AFC South is very, very interesting to me. And for some reason, I don't even know why, I can't put my finger on it. Yes, I know J.J. Watt's coming back. But for some reason, I just don't see the Texans in the mix this year. I see the Jags in the mix more than I do the Texans.
You know, and that's the great thing. That's what makes the NFL the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's happening somewhere. You know, whether it's the AFC South, whether it's the NFC North, there's some division that's completely going to get flipped on its head this year. Who saw Carolina falling apart last year?
Right.
To the extent that they did.
Yep.
You know, it happens every year. Somebody rises, somebody falls. I am 100% with you on Jacksonville. You look at Leonard Fournette and what he should be able to help out the problems that Blake Bortles has had, at least in allowing the Jaguars to avoid putting Bortles in some situations.
Mm-hmm.
And then the defense that they have, that's a phenomenally talented defense.
Yep.
They're probably on paper a top five defense in the league this year. You know, maybe they're going to contend to be number one.
Yeah.
When all is said and done. And could they be significantly better this year? Absolutely. And you just don't know.
Yeah.
And you know, at the Cardinals, I for one had no clue they were going to struggle as much as they did a year ago.
Yeah.
And fall out of the race.
I don't think anybody thought they were going to struggle.
You know, and they did, you know, horribly. And you just, I think it's why people love this league so much. You never know what's going to click. The 2012 Colts are a great example. You know, they came out of nowhere and they kept playing. They kept doing just enough to win that week and move on. And before you know it, here's a team that, you know, at the beginning of the year was, I think, 32 in at least one power ranking, as everyone remembers the T-shirts,
mm-hmm.
who started the year 1-2, and you're thinking, uh-oh, you know, when they lost to Jacksonville in week 3, and then what happened the following week when Chuck Pagano, you know, was diagnosed with leukemia and he's going to be out for most of the year, at no point did anybody who I know say, yeah, I think they're going to finish 10-3 the rest of the way and go to playoffs.
Yeah.
The only person who I think even thought that was possible was Bruce Arians. And I think even with him, it was more of a hope. Like, this is the best-case scenario. But that team, for whatever reason, galvanized around that. And there's all kinds of things that are going to affect on and off the field and change every team in the league's course. And it's why the NFL is the best reality show out there. It's why it captures the nation's imagination the way it does. And it's why we can scoff at some of the rankings we see in the preseason, but you just don't know. You just don't know. Yeah. And I think in Indianapolis, that may be more true than anywhere this year, just because the extreme makeover that's happened here, and things can go, you know, in a lot of different directions.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of improved defenses in the AFC South right now. I mean, the Colts are one of them as well, but look at the other three. I mean, I think maybe my thought on the Texans, though, is because they lost some guys, and I don't mean Simon in particular, but they lost some other guys too, Bouye and stuff like that. That's a different, totally different unit. If they, you know, if they improve or stay the same, I think you can definitely chalk up that as a win for not only the coaching staff, but the organization in general, because that was a really nice looking defense last year with a lot of chemistry. And, you know, you Merciless and Clowney and Watt and some of those other guys that they've got up front. I mean, that's tall task regardless, but it's that second and third level where those guys really, you know, we'll see the chemistry that evolves from that. But Tennessee, Jacksonville, man, I don't want to say worried. I'm legit excited to see how the Colts can play against that team, because the Colts offense is in pretty good shape. Not a ton of turnover on the Colts offensive side of the ball, but that Colts offense has to start being a little more unique and creative than they've been in the past few years. I've been looking over Luck's interceptions and touchdowns in recent weeks, and I'll tell you, some of these route combinations and concepts are just awful. I mean, two receivers going out with a check down to the running back with five guys in coverage. I mean, it worked once last year against the Jaguars. You remember the play against Jalen Ramsey where Dorsett took the touchdown deep, and they had run the same play. That was the second time they ran it. It was the exact same play. Dorsett was open, wide open deep. Luck didn't throw the ball. He was looking short to Hilton. They, like, maybe 5 to 6 minutes later in the game, they run the same exact play, same exact route concepts, and the Jaguars bid on it again. And this time Luck hit Dorsett deep for that touchdown. There's just things like that that, you know, I don't think that under their new coaching staff and with their kind of refurbished front office there, or just realigned, I guess, that they can really – I don't think that those guys are going to have the same mindset going into this year. I just see that as a really hungry group, that every single guy that comes into their training camp is going to see that they are around a crap ton of talent. And that was what – I think that's what worries me about them as well. They've got a whole new set of leadership. They're going to be listening to a new mouth in camp. And, you know, Gus Bradley was always a guy that came off as a real good dude as well, and just seemed to be a friendly voice. And I don't think that they're going to have that same situation down there this year.
Yeah, it's totally different. And Tom Coughlin coming in to run that ship, you know, the way he handles things, and there's not going to be a lot of leaks. You know, he's going to clean up the details, and he's going to be very particular in what he wants. And one way or another, he's going to get that. You know, so we'll see how long it takes for that to develop. But you know the way Tom Coughlin runs that program, and you know the success that he had in Jacksonville previously. So yeah, the talent's there. You know, I think talent's there in Tennessee as well. It's just going to be a really fun year in the AFC South, I think, because I just don't think it's going to be the weak division that it's been, you know, in some years past. And it's going to be a lot of exciting matchups, a lot of games within the division that could go either way. And you know, I think the Colts just have to hope that they're able to give Luck the pieces that he needs to make the plays late, because I think that's honestly what's going to make the difference.
Yep.
Out of Luck, Mariota, whoever ends up under center for Houston, and Bortles, you know, which of those guys makes the most plays in the fourth quarter of the most division games, and that's who's going to win this division. I really feel that way.
Yep, I absolutely agree with you. You know, looking at everything, how aggressive Ballard has been this offseason, it makes you kind of wonder, is there, you know, we're already looking forward to cut day, right? I mean, we've talked about this multiple times in the past. We're looking forward to that major 37-guy cut for each team to kind of see the realignment of a lot of teams. A lot of teams are going to look a lot different, I think, not just the Colts by that time. And so I'm waiting for who's that guy who teams don't want to cut, that they want to trade for a late conditional round pick or something like that. Do you think the Colts are any way, shape, or form in the market for a guy from another team like that at this point before training camp?
That's going to be interesting to see. I'd be surprised right now, just because I know that Ballard's been really aggressive, but he's been aggressive in kind of a really restrained way. You know, you look at the contract.
Really smartly aggressive.
Nobody. Yeah, really, really smartly aggressive. And there's nobody that they're really tied to for very long. And a lot of those guys that get popped out that you're talking about, a lot of times it's because of their contract.
Right.
You know, it's a deal that's not necessarily a bad deal, but it's not money that team wants to pay right now. And I'd be surprised if the Colts are a team that feels like they're close enough where, you know, one guy in that situation would make that big of a difference. That being said, I think they're going to be, you know, live wires when it comes to the waiver wire. I think they're going to be all over that.
Mm-hmm.
I think you could see multiple claims put in by the Colts, and then whoever they're rewarded, you know, that's happened under Grigson too. I mean, we talked about it not too long ago, you know, some of the successes that he found on after cutdown day. And I think Ballard's going to be maybe even more aggressive in that regard. He's pretty much telegraphed that a few times.
Right.
He's mentioned it two or three times this offseason, how much he's studying other rosters and looking forward to that day. So I expect that to be an active day for the Colts.
Me too. It's really fun to think about. There's a lot that's going to happen, I think, in the next 2 months that is really going to not only drive like the camp competition type stuff that we're all going to be writing and talking about, it's that kind of thing, that what is the news that's really going to blow up a fan base for that season, whether that turns out or anything like that, you know, is another story. But the excitement that puts that injects into a fan base really can't be measured, because you immediately see the reaction not only in social media but in ticket sales and everything. I just think that I don't want to say that I think it's going to happen as far as like a trade of some kind or anything like that, but it would not surprise me. It would not surprise me that some team, and I'm going to cheat here because there's a guy, that, you know, or two for that matter, that I think are on teams with really poor salary cap situations right now that could really benefit the Colts. I'd love to see Chris Ballard go after. I'm not going to say him because I've already written it, and I just think that if it's not one of them, it could be a couple other guys. But I just wonder at that point who's worth trying to trade for, who's worth waiting for on cutdown day. What's the difference in ability between those two guys? You know what I mean? If you got one guy that's 26 and you think he's got a huge upside, you might consider trading for him. But you've also got a guy who's 27 who's got a lot of upside, and you think that he could be a roster casualty. What's the difference between those two guys to make you either decide to pull the trigger on a trade or to wait until cutdown? You know, that there's a fine line there, I think, between a lot of that stuff, and that's always the interesting thought to me. Want to ask you about a couple guys that I pegged as possible guys who could be roster casualties. We've talked about these guys briefly in the past, but I want kind of, and I don't want to say definitive, but this is all speculation and conjecture, but we'll start with Philip Dorsett. Does he make the roster or does he not?
I think they want him to, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? As far as to the extent that they, in their mind, have an ideal 53-man roster, but that to me is going to be the toughest call, maybe possibly, when it comes down, because, you know, a guy like Chester Rogers offers so much consistency and he offers so much ability on special teams. And if they don't keep six receivers and they just keep five, and it ultimately comes down to those two players, I'll tell you this much, what makes it tough to predict too, and we talked about this going into the offseason, we have no idea. Chris Ballard has no investment in most of these guys. And the guys he brought in, sure. But a guy like Philip Dorsett is not his first-round pick.
Right.
So there's not going to be a sense of, well, I have to prove to myself. But even if you look at Kansas City last year, they cut their third-round pick in the preseason, Kavari Russell, the cornerback from Notre Dame, because they felt like a sixth-round pick outplayed it.
Right.
So it's not going to be I know there's a bunch of words out there, you know, being said and people kind of putting whatever worth they put in that about competition, about earning stuff. You know, Ballard comes from a place where they've proven that before. And I think he brought that up at one point in the preseason, you know, hey, look where I was at last year, we cut the third round pick. So I think, I don't want to say he has an uphill battle or anything like that, but I think Philip Dorsett has some work to do to ensure a roster spot this spring.
Yeah.
This summer.
I agree. We've already talked about, you know, Rodgers recently, about what he provides for the team, but you know, you've got guys like Aiken, you've got that whole group right there. I think Dorsett's a very legitimate number four or five guy. And if anybody, you know, is available on the waiver wire, that's more proven that has similar abilities or something like that, he might find himself on cut day going somewhere else. That would be, I think that would be weird, but I also wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't put that past Ballard at all. Like you said, that's not his first round pick. And if he doesn't like him, we're looking at pennies right here when it's all said and done about his contract versus some of the other guys. A couple other guys we've talked about, one being one of the guys that we really liked from last year, one being a rookie this year. This presents an issue, especially when you look at the competition, you look at their positions, what they offer, their durability or their versatility. T.Y. McGill and Grover Stewart, do either of them or both of them make the roster, one or both?
I almost feel like one. I mean, the way things are shaking down, and the question there is going to be, do they think they can stash Grover Stewart, you know, on the practice squad? Do they think they can get him through waivers, which, you know, probably, you just don't know. But there's a good chance of that, unless he blows up during the preseason and really, you know, catches a bunch of people's eyes. But if that would happen, then maybe they bring him back from practice squad and keep T.Y. McGill. Otherwise, they may have to determine, you know, what they want to do there. I guarantee you there's somebody, whether it's one of those two guys or somebody else, there's somebody on the defensive line who's going to get cut, who it's going to hurt to see go, who the team's going to not be all that excited about cutting. And that's the point they've gotten to with that position group. Somebody's leaving that group who is going to go on and be a part of another team's success this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of what we've talked about in the past, you've got Hankins and Woods, McGill and Stewart are all ultimately zero tech to three tech, somewhere in that range right there. You're going to keep four guys that basically can do the same thing. I think one of those guys has to go. One of those guys, whoever isn't, and I say go, like not as far as the 53-man roster, we like McGill. Stewart is a rookie that they drafted. That's, you know, in my opinion, I think the common thought process behind that says that McGill is the guy who goes, because most GMs like to keep the guys they draft, you know, at least be able to see what they can do and they can offer the team. But again, there's such a new and fresh feeling to the way that Ballard's brought this team up. Thus far, you just don't know. And I tend to agree with you. I think it's one of those guys. But a lot of it really depends on the other positions, like what we talked about with the receiver position. Do they keep five and use Rodgers as a return guy? That they don't need a sixth necessarily if that's the case. Do they keep nine offensive linemen? Do they keep 10? You know, there's just every position this year is going to be, you know, there's going to be probably 10 guys that are going to be in there between that 48th spot and the 57th spot, you know, or whatever, just for random numbers. So, but they're going to be, those guys are all going to be heavily talked about. to find out which of them are staying and which are going, who offers the most, who's the most beneficial to our team, and who's going to help us win games. It's really exciting. And one of those guys right now that I think is just in the similar situation is Dorsett, and possibly even worse, I dare to say, TJ Green. What are your thoughts on him?
He's going to be interesting because I think there was a message sent to him during training camp or during mini camp. And we talked about that a little bit on the air, a little bit off the air.
Mm-hmm.
It really felt like to me that there was a message being sent there because he wasn't just demoted to second team. There were times he was working with the third team out there. And granted, it's May, and so there is no depth chart, and you can make too much of that to a certain extent. But it felt like, for whatever reason, and I'm not saying they lost confidence in him, because I think if they had, I don't think they would send that message, you know, so I don't think it's a matter of that, but I think there was a clear message being sent to say, hey, look, we want to see more from you. And if he responds the wrong way from that, then yeah, you know, he's in a tough spot. Safety became a really interesting position the moment Malik Hooker fell into their lap. Because all of a sudden, I think you had some plans, you know, if you're Ted Monachino and some of the defensive coaches, you had some plans of what you're going to do, and now all of a sudden, you got a guy who probably shouldn't have been there at number 15, and now some plans change. And now, you know, Darius Butler can maybe be flexible, can maybe move in and out. Obviously, Clayton Gather's health is going to affect that position. How much do they really like Matthias Farley? You know, all these things are going to play into it, but that position became a lot deeper and a lot more competitive the moment Malik Hooker was still available there at number 15, and I think TJ Green, I'm not saying he doesn't understand it because he's talked about the competition and he's talked about welcoming it, but I think it's going to make him either raise his level of play and get into that, or possibly be a guy who starts being talked about as maybe not being in the mix.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, and this is probably something that I'll accidentally fall off my chair for and break an ankle just for saying this stupid stuff, but when we look at how much talk there was in the offseason of Clayton Gethers becoming a full-time linebacker, just because it was mainly be drew out because the linebacking core was so bad last year throughout depth-wise. When we look at a guy like TJ Green, his body type is not made to be a linebacker. We understand that. But I don't think Clayton Gethers' body type was either his rookie year. But he certainly looked a lot more Bob Sander-ish, you know, last year in camp. And it was quite surprising to me that he looked as big as he did. Do you think that there's any chance at all that they look at TJ Green and say, look, you pretty much have to come out and try to be a linebacker or something of the sort. If he's lucky enough to make this team, are they talking to him throughout the season and saying, look, this is your way to make the roster next year because currently the way you're playing isn't going to cut it on the back end?
I think they'd like to put him in that hybrid spot. I think they've mentioned that a lot of times. We've mentioned a lot of times that one of the biggest problems with losing Clayton Gathers is there's really nobody else. It's sort of similar to when Dante Moncrief got hurt last year. There's really nobody else on the roster who has Gathers' skill set,
right,
who can actually do the things that he does. And I think they would love to see TJ Green be that guy. I think he's a physical guy. I think they see some raw skills there, and you've mentioned that. You know, that those abilities are there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they would definitely, I think that might be part of the message that's being sent to him. I think there's a real hope that if Clayton Gathers can't go, and hopefully he can, you know, hopefully everything works out well and he's ready to go and he comes back and he continues on the upward trajectory that we've seen him on. But I think there's real hope within that team and that organization right now that TJ Green could be that guy.
Yep.
You know, could be the guy to fill that spot. But he's going to have to change, like you said, he's going to change his body type a little bit. He's going to have to change his mentality a little bit, you know, to go in and be that guy who sticks his nose in the run game and does that. But I think that is his best path for the future for this roster.
Yep, I totally agree with you for sure. Let's look at one more guy real quick before we wrap it up here. How about Zach Banner? Do you see him making the roster simply because he's a draft pick as well? I mean, or is there something there else that you see with his skill set? I personally don't, just because I see who I saw on tape when I was watching him right after he was drafted, and a little bit before when he was before he was drafted. I see a slow, big guy that, though he takes up a lot of space, he doesn't really offer much in the way of quality pass protection and or run helping in the run game. Is there something, I mean, I know we don't know a bunch about the rest of the guys that are really trying to make that eighth, ninth, and 10th spot, if whatever, you know, ends up being for the offensive line that they keep at the 53. But does Zach Banner fall into one of those eighth, ninth, or 10th spots? And is he, you know, in your eyes, is he a roster worthy guy?
I think he's a project in a similar way that LaRaven Clark was last year for them. I think he's a guy that they know isn't ready right now, who they're hoping that they can make some changes with, both in terms of his weight and in terms of his stance, in terms of things that he's doing. I know that they coached him pretty hard, starting right away in rookie minicamp. And you know, there was – Joe Philbin was in his ear an awful lot. It seemed like there was always a coach around him. You know, they're definitely working him hard, coaching him hard, trying to find out if there is something inside of him that they can unlock, because he is a giant of a man.
Yes.
And so, you know, but that isn't necessarily enough to keep a roster spot. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just because there's potential doesn't mean you're going to have to show something. So I think that becomes another numbers situation. It's going to depend on how many tackles they want to keep, how they want to work that. You know, last year, LaRaven Clark was kept and was inactive most of the year. And then towards the end of the year, he came out and he certainly had some flaws, but he also showed some flashes. And then right now he's penciled in as a starting right tackle. But that can change. You know, there's no doubt about that.
Absolutely.
That's another, I think Zach Banner, I think his path, if he's on the main roster, is very similar.
Yeah.
I think, you know, he's a guy who, if he's there, it's going to be kind of a redshirt season. If not, he's a guy I could see them trying to sneak through and continue to build on the practice squad. I think the one thing that should be scary to him as far as the roster mechanics go right now is what they've been doing with Jeremy Vunovich. We talked about that before,
mm-hmm.
You know, playing him at guard a little bit, trying to see if he's got some flexibility. If that's the case, that probably puts him ahead of Zach Banner in the pecking order. Now, again, are they 8-9? Are they 7-8? Where they fall will make a difference there. But, yeah, I think Zach Banner is a guy that he's going to have to come out and he's going to have to show something to them that he hasn't shown so far. And hey, that's happened.
You know
that as well as anybody.
Right.
You know, some light can go on over the summer and a different guy shows up at training camp. And I'm not saying it has to happen for him, but I think to some degree it does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's going to have to show something more than he's shown to guarantee a spot. Now, I do think there's enough there that they think physically that I think they're going to want to take a long look at him.
Right.
And so I don't think it's going to be a quick trigger. But I think it goes for everybody. You know, we've talked about that 100 times, but it's no less true now than it was the first time. Everybody on this roster is going to have to make themselves necessary, to use a Paganoism. you know, I really believe that's more true this year than it has been at any time in the past 4 or 5 years.
Yep, I agree.
Everyone's got to earn that spot.
Yep.
And some guys have a tougher road than others. And I think everybody you mentioned has a little more in front of them than maybe some of the other guys. But I really believe there's not one position on this team that's going to be given to somebody because they were a draft pick or because that they were – you know, their size or their 40 time or anything else. I think everybody's going to have to show a trait on the field that keeps them on this roster.
Yep, I totally agree. And I think just personally, if I'm looking at do you cut Grover Stewart, for example, or do you cut Zach Banner? I cut Banner because I, first of all, think he's a little safer to come back to the practice squad than a guy like Grover Stewart would, a guy who apparently a lot of people seen the explosion and were interested in him when it came down, possible draft status, fourth, fifth round, sixth round, whatever it was going to be for that team. But there was a lot of people interested in him. Apparently he took a lot of visits, I guess. So, I think that Banner would be the less risky guy if you want to, you know, risk letting go of him, bringing him back to the practice squad. And then you know, bringing him in with a guy like Philbin and all these guys with the offensive line who have been together and produced some chemistry and camaraderie and stuff like that in the offseason. I think that'd be a good group for him to get in with, a guy that we both believe, or a team we both believe on the offensive line that is starting to improve and show some growth. And I think that we believe that this group's going to show that growth this year. So it'll be certainly interesting. I'm really excited for this year at camp. George, thank you again for stopping by, man. I'm going to let you go and give you a rest for the night, if there is much of it left. So thank you so much for dropping on our initial episode here of the Stampede Blue Colts Cast. It's been a great time, as always. Do you want to plug anything on your own over there?
I've mentioned it before, but I got my own podcast on the way, Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, and hopefully that'll be something that if people aren't sick of me by now, they'll hopefully seek that out. I'll have information on my Twitter on how to find it, and I really want Colts Nation to get involved here because I really want that to be a spot where we can interact and they can ask questions and we can give them as much information as possible.
Absolutely. You guys check out George on Twitter at GM Bremer. And I am signing off for tonight. This is our very first episode for the Stampede Blue Colts Cast. I thank you guys for joining me. We're going to have a ton more, multiple per week. I don't have the iTunes address or anything like that for you guys at the moment. But all this stuff will be going up on Stampede Blue. Everything will be interactive. We want to get you guys involved. We put out a Stampede Blue mailbag call out today. So if you guys want to get into that, go to stampedeblue.com and make sure that you guys are getting in on that and hit the Gmail account up with any of your questions. Those will be answered every single Saturday for you guys. So also, if you want to call in, you want to get your question read on the air, hit me up at 574-516-2881, and we'll get those questions answered for you. George, one last time, thank you, sir.
No problem. Anytime. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely. Thank you guys all for listening, and we'll talk to you next time right here on the Stampede Blue Colts Cast.